Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, a book on tape, chapter 1. Privet Drive. The ominous fog makes the nighttime even more hoary and mysterious than usual here in suburban Britannia. Out from the shadows of God knows what dimension steps the oldest wizard in the books, the near-dead Dumbledore. He is clearly a powerful beast and walks with dignity despite his age and attire. He sees a cat that he knows right before he sets to work. He produces a wizard's tool known as the Street Darkener, and with a practiced angling of the arm, begins to siphon away the clarity made from mankind's bulbs. Magical deeds are afoot, dear readers. Magical darkness, a must. The atmosphere complete, the cat, now protected by shadows, transforms into who else but Professor Hardcastle McCormick, an old friend and ally of Dumbledore the Half-Dead. She is truly a great wizard also, and possesses many a skill that might aid in tonight's random errands. They speak gravely of tonight's horrible decision. And dear readers, trust me, their work tonight is dubious. What are they to do? Are they really going to go through with tonight's desperate plan? The choice is clearly in powerful hands as Dumbledore ponders with his gigantic brain. Just then, a light approaches in the clouds. Shredding through the stratos descends no other than Hagar the Horrible. A huge man that, if you didn't know better, you may mistake him for a giant hairy truck. He is Dumbledore's gopher, and now perched upon his sky leopard, Hagar seems at the end of an errand that almost bested him. But lo, out from his manly pape, he produces the most powerful baby in the universe. Dumbledore accepts the swaddled child like the delicate button of an atomic bomb. His bowels tense. No false moves here. Hardcastle McCormick pleads with Dumbledore not to go through with the plan. What plan, you ask? Well, they are going to leave this veritable weapon of the gods, this paradox of babiness and power, right here on a frickin' muggle's doorstep. But shh, says Dumbledore to the baby, and shh, he says to the laity, as Hagar gnashes his teeth in inner conflict and almost drowns in snotty, fearful tears. His master Dumbledore tells him to wait in the frickin' car if he has to. And the baby is left. The baby with the most telling of scars. The baby that is the seed of power. The baby that is the inheritor of the horrible, hoary hammer of the gods. Harry, the wizard who is destined to vanquish all evil, and if he so wishes, brings it back again. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone! Chapter 2. Harry Potter wakes to the sound of his evil aunt banging on his bedroom's tiny door. His adopted family treats him so poorly, he can barely keep from incinerating them with any number of spells he keeps hidden way up his sleeves. Harry's room is cool, though. He's clearly made the most of it. Unlike his cousin, Roast Beefy, whose birthday happens to be today. The cousin has no idea of the power he is toying with. He is indeed a mean little puke who is borderline retarded and must shout moistly every stupid sentence he manages to piece together. As Harry prepares breakfast, totally magic-free and labor-intensive, his vomit-inducing uncle, Giggle Snort, looks on as the evil mother does the blind man birthday dance with Roast Beefy. The living room turns out to be full of presents for the nonplussed roast beefy weefs. Of course, it is never, never, never enough. Chunks of demand splatter on his parents' faces. Harry must stay calm and repress his urges of igniting the house in a demonstrative fireball, ending the life of these three little pigs. But our wolf remains cool. Today the family is going to the zoo, and on the way, Uncle Pigfat sinisterly suggests a beating to Harry if he sees any kind of magic out of him. Ho ho, dear reader. It looks like Uncle Salt Porker has some idea of our hero's magical brain. His face is the worst. The family seems to be happy with nothing. A giant Burmese leopard-eating snake basks in front of their piggish faces like a poem. And of course, they want it to dance for them. But not our Harry. The sweet wizard in remission is psychically linked with the beautiful snake being. Harry having dreamt himself of eating leopards, boars, and dick-dicks. And what do you know? Harry can actually speak with this creature. Will his talents ever stop emerging? Harry, with the social grace of a saint, is relating with the orphaned captive, pig-hating snake. It is a beautiful moment indeed, and Harry for once feels in tune with the natural universe. This snake has no parents, is dangerous, and is beautiful. Harry sees himself here, in this snake, like looking at his image in the mirror. It is a perfect moment. Cousin Roast Beefy Weefs notices some action and runs over to spoil the moment. Harry totally loses it and frags Roast Beefy good with a glass begone spell. Wahoosh! The terrible cousin spills his ass into the cage as the supine beast nobly erects himself out and is thanking Harry as he slithers into the nightmare hearts of all of the muggles nearby. Everyone is afraid of this beast but Harry. Of course, Harry, who is part of the natural universe now. And what do you know, dear reader? Providence must have cast a glass be back spell, cause take a look at the zoo's new acquisition. It is a play, a tragic comedy, The Lament of Roast Beefy O'Weefy. Ha ha! The family Porkums is hit palpably with shame. Yes, Harry, do laugh on. Laugh right in their unthinkable faces. Chapter 3. As the Hog family enters their home to regroup after Harry's formidable blow, Uncle Porkflaps tries to tear Harry's wig off before remembering Harry is a boy and probably his hair is real. No more magic, his throat rasps without its usual gravy lube. Realizing his throat is foodless, Uncle Pigums exits for the kitchen. In the following weeks, Harry falls into a depression. He feels like an exile here in this world. He feels alone and hated. Harry, going about his innumerable chores, picks up the mail only to be bowled over at the discovery of a letter addressed to him. A connection is trying to be made, he thinks. Someone needs me. Having delivered the mail, Harry tries to conceal his letter. But Cousin Ragtime Roast Beefy thinks that Harry has a possible cookie or wafer and takes away the letter before Harry can open it. Uncle Pigums inspects the letter the best he can with those eyes, and a phantom of fear crawls across his goutish face. Harry ponders what could be so wonderful. In the next few days, a miraculous event unfolds. Birds from every breed and fashion begin to crowd the pork and chips home with letters addressed to Harry. The uncle is beginning to feel the pressure. Harry, in a spiral of depression, turns to the escape of the world of miniature equine aficionada. He produces many a wine out of nowhere spell and is drunk every day before noon. He is only half aware of his uncle's battle with the birds. The aviary horde perch on everything perchable, tarping the yard, car, roof, and all, in hawker-like bird waste, and of course, the letters. Every bird revels in the madness it is inducing on Uncle Salt Porker. The house, under drifts of letters, molting, and bird shit, now pushes the uncle to burn anything that is represented on paper. Harry, through a cloud of wizard magic and stealthily pinched Valium from the evil aunt, notices his uncle fraying. One morning, while doling out biscuits, Harry listens half-heartedly to his uncle's plans for a giant cat to be unleashed upon his feathery foes. But Harry's attention is drawn to the window. Sunlight. Harry could almost cry at this simple gift of the universe. If it weren't for these awful people, he would cry, but he must not show weakness, or else they'll hand him his ass. He tries to focus on the yard and the birds. Why are they trying to contact me? The fax makes its way into his jungle of a conscience, just as a veritable fountain of bird-propelled letters issues forth onto the family. Harry decides that this is it. This is the moment. I must make my move in this masking of a snowstorm, and I will take one letter into my room and whisper it to my horses and see what they think. Oh, how the wine talks. But Harry cannot make it to his tiny door, even impeded by the onslaught of letters. The now totally bonkers Uncle Porkstar crashes down on Harry. The battle that would have been is now a sad display. Harry at the drunken bottom of a depression well, and his once formidable foe, mindless and flailing. Chapter 4. A crushing blue night lays upon the sleeping Porksters. As Harry, awake and active, plays out his happiest of sad moments. Sigh. His birthday, of course. But who could care, especially out here where love is dashed upon the rocks like a rose given as an insincere apology. Love, don't give up on it, Harry. Make a wish upon it. Upon the stars. But blam! 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 At the door. The Porktown family scuttles into position, but what busts in the door is far more than expected. It is Hagar the Horrible, the nightmare of hair, a wall of a man. But buried under his woolen chest is a heart I'd trust a baby with. After politely shutting the door, Hagar turns to the squawking uncle and aunt. His face is a mask that displays he is in no mood, and he bends the gun that is pointed in his face straight in half. A bullet ejects into the heavens, interrupting an angel's sleep. But oh no, Harry! Hagar confuses roast beefy weaves for Harry. No! Don't take that chili barrel to Hogwarts. Then Harry rolls into view. I am Harry. Whew. Now if you cry easy, be careful here, dear reader. For Hagar produces for Harry his first birthday gift. It is a cake, handmade no less with love by a warrior of the wind. Who are you, nice man? Harry asks, feigning a child's air. Hagar says, Hagar, and tells Harry that he is the gatekeeper and keymaster at Hogwarts. Harry is confused, though he knows how to play his cards. A man like this could be in the market for a sidekick. What's Hogwarts? A masterful play by Harry. Hagar stumbles around with words and seems put off a bit at himself. Clearly, sidekicking for Hagar would suck balls. Hagar can't contain it anymore and just drops his secret. You're a wizard, Harry. Harry, with a talent of Laurence of Olivier, feigned surprise. I can't be a wizard. I'm just Harry, again with the oil of Olivier. Well, just Harry, I imagine then that lions are just lions, and gods are just gods. You are a special boy. You don't know it, but you and I go way back. Harry really wishes he could have a glass of wine or something right now. Hagar gets up from the couch and produces a letter. It is clear now that Hagar is a bird friend, for indeed the letters are the same as before. Harry begins to read. Come to Hogwarts and become a wizard, Harry Potter, it says. He reads thus aloud. Uncle Baconface races in to interject a spit parade, which Harry translates into a most disturbing disclosure. The pigs knew all along. They knew that Harry's parents were wizards, of course. And now the sickest pinched-up mouth of an aunt lets out that Harry's parents did not die in a car crash, but were, of course, destroyed in a much cooler way. A wizard's fight. She begins then to berate Harry's mom, calling her names and trying to say that Harry sucks and stuff like that. Her venom is sharp. Sucking is nothing Harry wants to do. Hagar then steps in, seeing Harry is in no state to argue for himself. This night is going to end good for Harry. End of story. As Roast Beef of Weefs grabs Harry's cake and begins to munch it, Hagar describes the pigs as muggles to Harry. Music-hating, magicless muggles. He lays down the law on Harry's schooling. A big fat yes, he's going. Hagar also goes on to say that the great Dumbledore is the teacher at Hogwarts and will make Harry into a man and stuff. Uncle Fat Train spews a slander on Dumbledore in return. Hagar gives him a truly horrible look. He points his magical umbrella and starts to say a spell like, "Don't ever talk again, fatty." But then he's interrupted by the smacking jowls of Roast Beefy Weefs. Zap! Goes Hagar with the umbrella, and voila! A curled up Cheeto shoots right out of Roast Bee's bottom! Woohoo! Shouts Harry. About time he burst that Cheeto. He's been trying to birth it for years. Hagar takes a sip off of what has to be whiskey and hands the flask to Harry. Harry takes a giant pull. And then Hagar says, "Let's get out of here. You like flying motorcycles?" Harry replies, "Anything's better than crawling." They both laugh and hold their bellies like two Santas on opposite scales. And then they gather up Harry's worn-out shoes and stuff that Harry wants to take with them. Chapter 5, Midday London. Whilst walking in broad daylight with Hagar the Horrible, Harry bravely reads his syllabus's demands. Wands, magic sand, one Turkish massage owl. Where can I ever obtain such obscurities? Hagar makes a knowing O shape with his hairy lips and directs Harry into a nondescript black plastic business. A bar? Hagar the Horrible, you better know what you're getting Harry into. Of course, the barkeep knows Hagar's bar-darkening frame. Hello, Hagar. Hello, Hagar. Hello, Hagar. It comes from all directions. Do you want some beer? No, that's okay. I have Harry frickin' Potter with me today, and we're doing some shopping. The bar inhabitants crane their boozed-up eyeballs in view. They all want to see the legend of Harry P. Old women, leathery hats, and grizzled madmen pinch themselves under the table to make sure they aren't dreaming. Harry handshakes with all. The defender of the dark arts teacher from Hogwarts School presents himself. His name is Professor Queerman. He stutters, clearly a fan of Harry. Harry makes a series of heartwarming gestures in an effort to calm the professor's nerves. Harry is truly a gentleman, and Queerman feels at home in his presence. Hagar moves along the business, where they have tons of shopping to do. He leads Harry out the back door and into what appears to be a dead-end alley. How do all those people know me? Do you want to do some shopping or what? A Masonic pentagram is described by Hagar on a brick wall, and Shazam! The doorway to a magical world is a folded back, brick by brick, for Harry's brain to take in. And ah! Welcome to Calgon Alley. Dear reader, imagine music. La-da-da-da-da, alive and marketplacey. Violins taking a break up in the air with non-threatening amblings and a wreath of tambourine lightly jangled. Enter scene of what looks like 1800s England downtown. Buildings crowded in unstably around tons of magical kids with their parents scraping together their needs for the upcoming school year. Witchy moms, wizardly dads, and worried, hurried Harry, acting excited and happy for Hagar's sake. Look, a Turkish massage owl! And look, it's a bat! Sweet mustache! Willikers! Harry watches kids breaking their nose cartilage on the window panes of broom stores. This is heaven. Chapter 6. I'm broke, Hagar. What do I do? I want that broom back there. Hagar happily extends a finger at the goblin bank of wobble columns. You got an account up in there, Master Harry. They enter the foyer amongst evil, pasty, hobbity of goody goblins. They are running the money show. Clever turnips, these needle teeth. Imagine a human of about 3 years of age with antler-like nose and ears and a jellyfish draped over its head, then stuffed into a leprechaun's suit. Hagar prompts the nearest leprechaun teller for a withdrawal from Harry's account. The leprechaun, famousness of Harry aside, demands Master P's bank key. Luckily, Hagar, the key master, naturally produces Harry's key. What else of mine does he have? Harry ponders. Now pay attention, dear readers. Hagar then very earnestly gives the leprechaun an envelope and says it's from Dumbledore, and that it has to do with that vault, the special vault. The goblin is in time with Hagar, and they know that this is grave business. Harry pays close attention. Soon, they are riding to the vaults on a roller coaster. The grossest-looking humanoid in the world tries to scuttle around on its moon-shaped limbs. It tries to remain cool and orders Hagar and Harry to follow it. It unlocks the door and backs away, trying to resemble what it thinks is a cool-looking person, but in reality, it is freaking Harry and Hagar out miserably. The door of the vault swings open, and right away starts to blow the socks off Harry P. Hagar makes noises out of his mouth, but Harry is not available. The piles of gold that are his instantly make everything beautiful for Harry. It's going to be okay, he thinks. Now on to yet another vault. More of my gold, Harry thinks. The leprechaun lifts a clawed finger up and down, tickling the door's back enough that it unclenches in its threshold and swings open, not to reveal a pile of treasure, but to reveal a silly little gunny sack. Hagar walks in, snatches up the gunny sack, and stows it away on his humongous person. This is between you, me, and the little Patty McGrossout, okay, HP? Harry nods. Chapter 7. Back on the shopping tour, and Harry needs a wand. Go up and Ed Vander's. I've got to tend to a few other details, and I'll meet you in there later, says Hagar. So Harry enters Ed Vander's wand emporium. The shop is full to the ceiling with wands. Which one to brandish? Which one to call my psychic extension? Harry irks out a few husky hellos. Hello? Hello? Jeepers! Ed Vander's rushes into Harry's view like a scarecrow carcass, a dreadful visage indeed, and a ghastly voice. Harry Potter, welcome. Master H is beginning to feel animosity towards his own celebrity. Harry gazes at the man's skin, a ketchupy callus of a face. I will make spells that save me from looking like him, Harry makes that mental note, I assure you. The mental notes are stacking. Ed Vander's produces a wand he thinks is suitable for our Harry. But on the first try, Harry totally frigs up half of the store with that wily stag of a twig. His stockpiles of nuclear-level energy will be tricky to funnel, thinks the Ed Vander's. He is tenacious. He pokes around in stacks of wand boxes for round two. A bigger wand, he suspects, will be suitable. Harry, now bored and tired, brandishes again. But, kabloomers! Destruction! Vander's, with a why didn't I think of it before look, the look that everyone's dad puts on when he's trying to pick out shoes and clothes for their kid, even though they have had thought of this before. From the beginning, in fact, they just want to draw out the afternoon with needless driving around and tryings on because they don't know what else to do with their kids. Well, he puts on that kind of look, and music galore fills the shop. He stands in front of Harry like some freaking Amadeus. He's no doubt imagining Harry as his orchestra. A warm light wand, hair-raisingly good idea. Vander's is flabbergasted at how good of a choice he has made. He starts to whisper like a thespian in a particularly juicy role. This wand's brother is the wand of that scar maker, the guy who gave you your famous scar. Harry almost dookies a shooter, but controls himself. Harry is sick of whispery games, and he says normally, "What is the Scarmaker's name?" But Ed Vander's all but holds up a skull and soliloquies, "Oh, we don't say his name, but know this, he is a badass. He could kill anyone, anything, a gorilla or a bear, whatever, anything, anything but you." Ed Vander's wasteland of a face crowds in close. His monologue is stinky. You are in a great position. You are an army of wizards, Mr. Potter. Use yourself wisely. His breath cascades over Harry's unbreathing nose. How long must I go without an intake of air, thinks Harry. It's the only thought that consumes his brain. Finally, breaking the mood, Hagar taps the window. Holy balls, he's bought the Turkish owl! Hurrah! Chapter 8. Hagar and Harry sit eating supper in a foggy wine spewed inn. The depression creeps into Harry again. His powers seem infinite. Everyone loves and fears him, but he himself can't seem to find his place among them. He is outside of people. And the wine flows. So, in an effort to cheer Harry up, Hagar decides to tell the tale of Harry's parents' death. Valmart is the name of the scar maker, he whispers. He's a wizard with uncanny powers. But this guy is so evil, as soon as he came out of the womb, he put a scar on his own forehead. Well, Valmart went to Hogwarts and started the Dark Side Club. It was actually the coolest club to be in at first. Everyone got a kick out of being in a club that stories were told about. You know, that's all anyone ever does anything for anyway, the sake of a story to be made of them. Well, you can be sure that Valmart earned his share of stories. Well, the club got strict, You had to love evil and not be shy about using murder spells, or else you'd be murdered. Your parents were some of the people who decided not to kill for fun. And so, Valmart went to their house and killed them. And while he was there, he tried to kill you. You as a baby, of course. But the spell ricocheted off your head and hit him instead. Now no one knows if he's dead, hiding, or hiding as someone else. But what's for sure is he hates you for not dying. And it's sure that if he's alive, he'll try to finish off the job, probably when you're sleeping. And he'll probably look like someone you love, just to make it worse when he murders you. So, you know, be on the lookout for that, and, you know, be careful when anyone loves you. Gulp, says Harry. Yeah, sure. Gulp. Gulp that down. Chapter 9. Whilst walking to the train station, Harry begins to feel the stomach butterflies accumulate. Hagar is then stunned by the time of day. He must get that gunny sack to Dumbledore. So he gives Harry his train ticket and totally freaking disappears on Harry. Harry thinks to himself, what the hell is meant by 9 3/4? Platforms were not broken up that way. Willikers! Harry feels dreadfully alone at this point, but in a way, it is a thrilling situation. Here he is, a young lad making his way in the world today. The stacks of gold coins in his pockets ease his worry. Carting along the Turkish owl and luggage, Harry makes his way up to interrupting a station man only because he's afraid he'll miss the train. Where's platform 9 3/4? Fudge off, you fuck, says the horrible man. He's obviously a goutish fucker. Thank God for the Irish. Harry overhears the redhead mother of a redheaded herd of children speak wizardly, and he knows he's in luck. Follow them, Harry, says Harry to himself. Follow them or die. Watching from a distance, Harry sees one boy, cart of luggage and all, disappear right into the brick wall between 9th and 10th platform. Holy balls! I'm not doing that, he thinks. Willikers. Some more kids whoosh through, and another, and Harry's nerves begin to settle. So finally he goes up to the mother and begs a lesson. Excuse me, Irish lady, can you show me how to do that? Here in the presence of such an honest and loving family, Harry feels immediate latent Helsinki syndrome withdrawals for the pork family project. He quickly shakes them off when the mother sweetly crimsons his bottom, and in Harry goes like a reversal birth onto and into the brick wall that stands ominously in front of him. He overcomes his fears, and he is on the correct platform. Ta-da! Ta-da! Ta-da forever! Amen. Well, bless my nippers, cries Harry. Bless them all day long. He stands in awe of the smoking engine, the train that shall propel him to the stage he was born for. Hogwarts Express. Chapter 10. As the Hogwarts Express drags along the countryside, all the kids' hearts race in time with the engine. The scene is so beautiful, the landscape is literally peppered with painters, working out masterpiece after masterpiece. Ron Weasel makes his grand entrance and shares the compartment with Harry. The proud lad remembers Harry from the platform and takes a seat. In the introductions, Ron is stricken with a face almost sacred when Harry introduces himself as the HP. The scar is called into question. It is shown, and it is wicked. The food service wench appears. Ron, obviously from a family whose money is spread thinly over the sheer volume of loin product, cannot buy a thing. But the newly minted Monopoly champ, HP, flashes some coin, and the new friends celebrate over a pile of cakes and frogs and nipples of Witch Venus and rats and Choco spells and fruit nuts, you know, wizardly fodder. The same kind of junky food you or I would wallow our mouths upon if we were in Harry and Ron's place. Ron loves Twizzlers. They talk over the syllabus and what's to be demanded of them at Hogwarts. Ronnie tells Harry that he's a pot of coffee by day, bottle of wine by night type of guy. Harry says, "Triple that, and you got me." They laugh, a congenial laugh, and both of them realize that they were instant friends. Friends forever. Just as Ron is about to produce yellow pillows, a spell he has learned at home, pillows of gold, he and Harry are interrupted by a horrible creature that is making its way down the hall and appears in the doorway. Only upon closer examination do Ron and HP realize it's a girl looking for a frog. Her hair seems to be made up of hair follicle-sized serpents, a prepubescent Medusa. Ugh. She demands that Ron continues his spell, but by mere proximity to such a wretched creature, Ron cannot concentrate and almost kills his rat instead of producing pillows of gold. She tries to degrade Ron, but only looks stupid. Knowing that these boys obviously hate her filthy guts, she sits down and repairs Harry's glasses with a pretty cool spell. The boys have to admit this creature posing as a humanoid has some chops. Definitely some chops indeed. Only after the spell does she recognize our HP for who he is. She intros herself as Harmony and begs Ronnie of his name. He only growls and smacks in her general direction. This prompts her to leave, and as a last-ditch effort to please, she informs Ronnie of his chocolatey-covered nose, as if he didn't know. Chapter 11. Finally, the moment of truth. The god wheel of fate has stopped for all of these kiddies. On yes! Yes, and fucking deed, you will be a wizard, and this moment is the first in a series of moments that no matter what feelings the moments embody, yes, yes is still the answer. Yes to life, and yes to magic. Just look at their faces, look at their auras. Yes, they are aglow. Dear readers, imagine a music that describes a nocturnal heavenly yes as the children float on the black waters, boating up to the castle of Hogwarts School. Harry knows straight away that this will be a place where he shall surely brandish his wand valiantly. He knows in his heart that this is his stage upon which he will conjure and conquer the world with his unworldly charisma points. Harry trembles and steadies himself in the reassuring, pasty presence of Ron the Bear. This moment of yes consumes our Harry. He feels here that he is the thing of stories, and for this he nearly weeps a frenzy of weeps. Finally, the kids make a formation up to the school's entrance. They file in up the main staircase and are met by none other than Professor Hardcastle McCormick, rasping her finger bones in withering patience as the children gather beneath her on the front stairway. She speaks about the school and that the class that is here now shall be divided into four different schools total. Her voice is chilling and like a piano made of frozen Windex. Her eyes float like smears of fish scales on her candle wax stump of a head. She goes on to describe the systems of merits, demerits, house cup, etc. Snoozers. All the kids are too tired to listen. The professor goes on and drones and talks memorably about different alumni that everyone should remember, but is interrupted by the child whose name is Upfish, who finally finds his frog. A victory for Upfish, but a staggering loss for Hardcastle. After Hardcastle leaves, a dreadful kid with sunburned hair notices Harry somehow and calls him out in front of everybody. The murmurs begin. Finally, like a cowboy, he saunters up to get a look at our HP. He intros himself as Mouth Oil, and of course, Ronnie busts up at this. The rich little bastard starts throwing class trash about Ronnie the Bear's hard-earning family being poor and rabbit-like. Of course, he goes for the shame spell. But HP gets Ronnie's back by issuing a comment or two so deft I can't even start to reproduce them here. The words do wonders for Harry's initial cred here at Hogwarts. Chapter 12. The children file into a glorious cafeteria where all the other pre-sorted students and teachers are awaiting the ceremony. A welcoming flute song accompanies their entrance as candles float in mid-air under a ceiling that appears to be made out of glass entirely. The night sky adjusts its clouds above them. The faculty table is full of weirdo professors and goblin-faced women. There are floppy, pointy head decorations, the true mark of a master magician. Hagar, Cromley, and friends sit awaitingly. Professor Dumbledore erects himself slowly and tells some jokes about death that most of the kids just don't get. He then, after warming up the crowd, introduces the blood-eyed cat that is head of security, and then introduces the cat's manservant, Dazzler. He then closes with yet another joke about death, perplexing some and scaring most of the children. He sits down finally. Hardcastle announces that it is time to begin. Her manners are that of a jilted lover's "I didn't love him anyway" sort of mood. The child sorting hat ceremony begins with the wretched harmony. A wise child she is and reminds herself not to freak out up there in front of everyone. The poor thing has complex on top of complex. She perches on a seat in front of all the kids, and Hardcastle places an oogity-boogity-looking hat over her hair. It grind dances on Harmony's head and grumbles pleasurably, "Gryffindor." Applause all around. Harry thinks to himself that this will be a long, long night. Next up, Mouth Oil is called to face the grinding hat. But before his ass cheeks can even start to pancake out on the stool, he is assigned a Slytherin. Some other kids get up and have their fates directed, and a wicked woman casts a look at Harry that makes his scar hurt. Ouch! This is the weirdest woman Harry's ever seen. A dark, foreboding weirdo that Harry feels certain will be the kind of teacher who paddles for fun. Ronnie the Bear is next for the hat. Ronnie is certain that this hat will bear down on him and hunch away at his scalp for nothing. Everyone knows that weasels are put into Gryffindor. Ronnie's 20 brothers and 12 sisters are all Gryffindor students or alumni or faculty. The obvious is true. Gryffindor it is. Professor Hardcastle tries hard to say Harry Potter like it's no big deal, but the room goes quiet. Everyone edges in to see and hear what's gonna happen next. The rustle of bets and cash is muted between robes. Harry doesn't want to bunk with mouth oil. But that hat starts in about Harry's potential and near limitless talent. Oh, Harry only winces at this constant bombardment of pressure to impress. This damn hat, all these fucking kids and teachers looking at him like he's a fucking television. I don't care, fuck it. Just don't put me with mouth oil, is all Harry keeps thinking. Finally, the hat's oscillations tense at... Finally, the hat's oscillations tense and cease upon Harry's scalp. Gryffindor it is, yes, and the universe sighs its magical sigh. Harry is congratulated wildly by his new bunkmates, but he feels numb and distant. A knowing glance is shared between the near-dead Dumbledore and the virile youth. And he hopes that he can pound a few cold ones. Chapter 13. Dumbledore cast his Stand Without Effort spell, following it up with his most pleasing Food of Plenty spell. If ever a room full of children has looked like little hyenas that have come upon a dead family of zebras, it is now. Piles of glitzy meat and sweetbreads appear. There are sweaty corns and honeyed everything. Talking bones loosen, and Harry relaxes into a whinish swagger. He talks closely with his RA. Who the fuck is that woman? She's got to be a half-troll. The RA replies, No, that's Professor Snake. She sucks for the most part, you know, acting mysterious and theatrical. God, I hate that shit, replies Harry. I'm here to learn, not to watch a performance. Just then, the conversation is busted up by a breeze of hilarious ghost. There are women ghosts and musketeers. Little John the ghost shows up and demands a song of farts or else. His friend, the Count of Reeds, whips lashingly every child in the face. No one is able to escape his mustached giggle. A ghost dance begins, and the kids watch on as a transparent orgy of flash dances and footlooses fog up the rafters of mealtime. Finally, every ghost is bored and evaporates either into the walls or out through the ceiling, and every student's belly is distended with jelly, wine, and pudding pops. The dinner is over. The RAs guide the new Gryffindors into the stairwell. The staircases are a maddening moving architecture that forever fuck up the students' days by moving here and there without warning. The kids climb stair after stair ad infinitum. Some talk about art, others simply concentrate on not vomiting from the intense vertigo. On top of the wine and meat that all of the children have eaten, they're just hoping to finally get to their rooms so that they can use the potty and acquaint themselves with the water closet. Finally, they file in front of a painting of the most beautiful woman ever around. The RA says the code word, and the woman in the painting loosens her perfect tongue from her mouth and beckons everyone present to enter. Beyond the painting lies the Gryffindor parlor. Smoking, cards, and nightcaps will all be the room's main functions for the kids, the RA goes on to explain. All eyes are heavy. The day has been a storm of excitements, and the children, after laying out their uniforms and shoes, are quickly starring in each other's dreams. It is a beautiful, pale blue night. All the children are wrapped in their blankets, all except for Harry. Stroking his bird, Harry is lost in thought, bathed in the cold moonlight. Who am I now? He thinks, as he winks at the night. And it seems to whisper back to him, "You are everything." Chapter 14. Harry awakes to yet another tequila sunrise. He and Ronnie the Bear are lost and late for their first class. But when the boys stumble out of breath into class, they are delighted to find that the teacher is late or out for coffee. But in unison, the boys' faces scream, "Holy freaking balls! The cat has been Professor Hardcastle this whole time! Willikers!" As the professor puts together a clever witticism about tardiness and George Washington's trees full of cherries, Harry makes another mental note: never pet cats that you don't know. No, never pet anything. The potion class's door is thrown open, and in dances that black hole of a woman with a scar-aching glare. She leans with her best effort to strike an attractive pose while beginning to whet her students' appetite with a taste of what kind of rhetoric could be expected here. The stark impossibility that such a thing can be human, not to mention a human that Harry has to pay attention to, is only matched by Malfoy's apparent infatuation with her. They look into each other's eyes like two serpents on a honeymoon. Snake, astonished that she has an admirer, and Malfoy, astonished that he likes women. Snake, seeing now that Harry is not paying attention to her lips and syllables, massages of notes, calls him out and rags on his celebrity in front of everyone. Harry is surprised, for he was only taking notes intently. Then Snake demands from Harry how to make a certain spell. Harry good-naturedly says he just doesn't know. How could he? This is his first day. Christ! Driven by some unholy jealousy, the unfair Snake presses him again. What is such and such? Or how many rat tails are in Minkerfuls? Harry again, with the oil of Olivier, acts humble, demure even, thankful for the lesson. He controls his urge to slay Snake's ears with a few fiery riffs off his wand. Snake finally subsides her onslaught. She stupidly feels she has cowed our Harry. At lunchtime, the kids relax and compare first impressions on teachers. Ronnie the Bear tells Harry that he could hardly see him cow to such an asshole back there. Harry explains to the bear that subtlety and patience are a great way to look pretty cool. The bear has to agree, and they give each other Fonzie looks. The rest of lunch is spent on mail reading, which is delivered by a host of birds that we, the readers, are already duly familiar with. Some kids get letters, others get ornaments that quickly fill with mother's blood, and some desperately wait for their letters to arrive, which shall never, for they are the type of kids that mothers never write to. Now, Harry opts to read the paper. Now, dear readers, if you've ever paid attention to me, now is the time. Harry reads aloud to Ronnie and Harmony that the Leprechaun Bank, which he had been to earlier on, has now been broken into. It was that same vault where the gunny sack had been. It was busted into by what is suspected to be black art wizards of Valmart's order. Jeepers. But of course the gunny sack was gone before the robbers got there. Chapter 15. Outside, Harry's class awaits their first lesson in broom stickers. Being that this is the last class of the day, kids are anxious to get rowdy. Finally, Professor Meowmers takes her position in front of the class. This morning, Harry does have one thing in common with Mouth Oil, his mood. A mood of annoyance and pity for his frustrated, easily astonished, and shallow peers. Of course, Harry commands his broom with ease, and like the beginning of dueling banjos, so does Mouth Oil. Harry later will be displeased with himself that he hates everyone today. Professor Catface, Mouth Oil, Tony the Shrimp, Facer, Yellow, Otter Pop, and yes, even trusty sidekick Ronnie the Bear. Whilst Professor Catface Meowmers barks orders, Harry's imagination sees before it a giant cake. A wedding cake. His parents' wedding cake. And he wants to eat it. But then he realizes this cake is Dumbledore's hat. And to reach it, he must climb up Dumbledore's body using his old rib cage, mouth sockets, and such as footholds. But before he can get halfway up the rickety old scaffolding of a man, degrading the saintly professor with his imagined dastardly feet and thumbs, he sees that the cake is indeed rotten, black, and toppled. Obviously forgotten over the years and adopted as a hat for reasons unknown to such a first year as Harry. The daydream is a weak attempt to stay amused during these idiot guide style classes. As HP comes out of his reverie, he is amazed to realize his friend Upfish has had some sort of serious accident. And upon leaving, Professor Catface Meowmers gingerly escorting Upfish out and to the school nursery zone, the kids begin to rustle with wild nerves, having been awarded time away from a teacher. It seems that Mouth Oil has Upfish's beloved blood ball, threatening to crash it. Ah, fuck this, says Harry, and he all but punches Mouth Oil right in the head and face. But Mouth Oil, being in the same little bad boy mood, defies Harry and takes the battle of limits up into the lower stratos. Will Harry defy Catface Meowmers for a chance of totally burning Mouth Oil? The wretched Harmony tries to restrain our Harry, but he is deaf with rage. Their skill is immediately deft. All the boys and girls feel like lower organisms in the wake of their godlike ability. In a dazzling aerial combat, Harry burns Mouth Oil quickly. He gets up Fish's sphere and for good measure crashes Mouth Oil's head into the bricks of the castle over and over. After letting loose some steam, Harry does a few victory tricks and flourishes on his standard school issue broom for the kids below. As he descends upon a cheering crowd of homies and newly converted homies who congratulate and pat him, only to be plucked away from his moment by that asshole Hardcastle McCormick. Ah, what a horrible day. Professor Hardcastle leads a sulky and punishment-expecting Harry down the hallways to the defense of Black Art's classroom. She asks a lizard-hugging, stuttery Professor Quirrman if she can see the student known as Major Wood. Wood is the captain of the Quidditch team, and Harry sees him as a Greek statue, an Adonis in witch's clothing. Clearly someone that Harry can relate to. Now, dear readers, imagine that song, Eye of the Tiger. Yes, for Harry is the new seeker of Gryffindor. His buddies fall in behind them as they strut through the halls. This is a procession of cool kids. Every student dreams of knowing them. But, cavalierly, HP and the effing bear decide to break away from their homies' entourage and talk over personal business. But soon, they are accompanied by the wretched Harmony, and cannot go into details about their thoughts. But hello, the usefulness again shows through as she decides to take Harry and Ronnie to the trophy case of honors. Behold, she manages out of her horrible mouth, your dad was also a badass. Chapter 16. As the three are making their way through the stairwell, naturally one of those buggering staircases shifts its course and sets them on a peculiar level. The kids, having nothing else to do tonight, their potions mixed, histories read, frogs destroyed, they decide to follow fate's lead. But soon, the three are able to deduct that they are indeed in the forbidden third floor, and if found, they will be killed on sight. No questions asked. Before they are able to decide whether to continue their investigations, the three turn around to see the blood-eyed cat, who indeed sees them too. They make haste through the cobwebbery and darkness, only to meet another dead end. Freaking door, HP declares. It's locked. Ronnie the bear quakes, but the wretched Harmony casts a spell so badass the lock falls apart and becomes a gas of rose petals that go up their noses like a baby's challenge. They are in, and just in time. The blood-eyed cat must have summoned its manservant, Dazzler, who idles like a van whose destination is being reconsidered. They are indeed in, but not away from danger, dear readers. Because lo, lying before them is a supersized portion of God's freak show creations, a three-headed giant dog, and it's getting up out of a dream of eating kids, one for each head, and hurrah for the dog, the dream comes true. Obviously, it's still sleepy, for our three heroes are able to bar the door against it and get away safely. Harry puts up with the bear bickering with the wretch over the practicality of a hungry three-headed giant dog in a school full of tasty kids, when the wretch points out that it had to be guarding something. Harry takes note of this, and out of respect for her detective-like prowess, lets the wretch vent a little while before he decides to take his leave with the bear. Both he and the bear are hoping to score a few bottles of red wine to go with the olives they pinched from the kitchen earlier. Chapter 17. Harry can hardly keep his heart in his clothes as he walks out on the cribbage field with Major Wood. His first lesson in the sport that could give Harry an outlet for his gathering rage and power. Major Wood's accent is so thick, Harry only hears it as a sort of music. A music from a shiny, muscular horn. A music of brotherhood and balls. Harry doesn't care much about the game's history and specifics, but his ears perk up when Wood comes to what Harry is supposed to do. He hands Harry an ancient leathery club, and Harry forces down a nervous throat lump. Next, Wood releases a ball that seems to have a will of its own. With all questions of what to do dissolving, Harry becomes the club and crashes it out of the park. Wood is obviously impressed, and Harry feels a relaxed joy. Harry knows that passion needs a vehicle, and chasing balls and wielding clubs seems pretty sweet. But Harry doesn't feel totally lost in these elements of the game. He still feels like the Harry without a home. A home where he may go wild is still not a home for him. It is at this moment that the golden snitch is produced. Harry immediately is nearly out of his skin with excitement over this ball. His destiny is here in this orb. He can feel it like someone just kicked him in his fruit stand. Catch this ball, Harry, and we win the game. Harry's face explodes in a smile. The snitch does a clockwork striptease in the air, and it licks and beckons lasciviously on the wind. Harry is at home. Among totally what-the-fuck-styled faces, Professor Ognott starts off a class on levitation. All the kids sit bored out of their asses in what looks like a courtroom. Feathers in front of them, wands firmly brandished. Every child is going through the movements of the levitation spell, but their minds are on that weirdo teacher. What the fuck is he? He is just so weird. They all try very hard to pay attention, but his voice chirps out of his little bundled-up body and jerky attacks at normalcy. Every child thinks this, but Harmony. Harmony being so wretched herself, she feels quite at home with the hideous creature and is able to levitate her feather with no trouble. The bear, being so disgusted with Ognott, turns his attention to Harmony. She seems to think that Ronnie can't do a simple levitation spell and makes a big to-do of her quick-witted abilities. Her spell is a delight for the professor. His head looks like a pizza left in a chicken house, covered in feathery bird sweat and oily discharge. Yuckers. Harry only sits there in a stupor. He is overwhelmed with the wretched Ognott. After class, Harry, Ronnie, and the boys walk together, doing impersonations of the wretched Harmony, when the desperate creature herself bustles by, obviously hurt deeply. HP knows he's got to make it right, even though it feels so good to make it wrong. Chapter 18. Halloween! Yes! Gorgeous floating Jackie O's in the cafeteria, and every student is feasting. The spread is beautiful. Apples, candied apples, appled candy, candied whiskey, apple fritters, anything that you could ever want. Upfish informs HP and the bear that Harmony has locked herself in the bathroom. She's been crying all day. Harry feels guilt pangs, but Ronnie the bear, he could give a fuck. Just then, Queerman bust in, rambling incoherence, but then everyone makes out that he's warning them of a horrible troll loose in the school. Everybody freaks out. Apple chunks hit the floor. Floating jack-o'-lanterns fall from the sky onto kids' heads and they run around like cartooned chaos. The near-dead Dumbledore commands everyone's attention with a mighty roar. "Don't panic," he says. "Teachers, grab your spell bags. And we will find this fucking troll, and we will fucking kill his fucking ass. He means business, and everyone takes it seriously." Snake, however, scared out of her bloomers, slithers out the side door in cowardice. As the Gryffindors move to their rooms of safety, HP and the bear realize that Harmony doesn't know about the troll and is in certain danger. This is a perfect way to make up to her. We'll save her and maybe sneak a peek at Dumbledore's chops. Then, running through the hall, They see the troll-sized giant shadow going into the girl's crapper. Jesus Christ! Harmony's in there! Harry doesn't think. He knows what he must do. Through teary eyes, Harmony looks up and up and up and up and up again upon a troll, huge with pineapple legs and a giant turkey club drumstick. Wisely, she slowly backs away and tries to hide in a toilet. But the troll will not have it. He swings like a drunken major leaguer. But triumphant, music appears, and HP and Ronnie the effing bear bust in on that troll. They start selflessly defending the wretched girl by straight away barraging the troll with spells that even mountains could hardly weather. The troll is so stupid, though, he does not even register the pain. But always dead set in destroying Harmony, he goes at her again, crash and whoosh with the drumstick. Crazed with fist of fury, Harry brandishes the crap out of his wand and up onto the troll's head. No problemo. He shakes that troll back and forth and rams his wand up into the nose, poking over and over what has to be the smallest frontal lobe in existence. But that troll gets lucky and holds Harry up by his leg. He's about to bash him with his stupid drumstick. Whoosh, whoosh, he's nearly missing. But then, who but the brave bear Ronnie whips out the old levitation spell and hovers the troll's club overhead, only to command it like a god right down on that troll's grody face. Thank God for that hideous little teacher who taught me that move, says Ronnie. The giant stumbles in near defeat and falls into the conquered position. The kids stay on their toes, but wipe their brows with nervous moisture. Harmony peels herself away from the wall, and Harry retrieves his wand in its most boogery state. Just then, Hardcastle McCormick and a gaggle of teachers, Snake included, rustle into the bathroom. She's pissed over the kid's safety being compromised and on the edge of a spastic dookie when she sees the troll's body. But Harmony steps up the bat and lays it on the dotted line. I was here, crying like an idiot, and these badass new gods came in and saved me. If it weren't for them, I would have been in that troll's stomach, for sure. Harry then, dear readers, notices a tear and blood all over Professor Snake's leg. Snake notices Harry, and he notices that he noticed there's a trait of noticing going on that's bewildering. Hardcastle scolds Harmony and demerits her a hard 20 points. Ouch. Right here, dear readers, you're going to want to put the audio on pause. Or no, you're going to want to put the movie on pause and switch to the second disc of audio. You can start it up again at chapter 19. When you push play on the DVD, you push play also on the new second CD, and it should start right away with chapter 19.